what is the best advice you can give a teacher who is wanting to start out, but just not feeling confident in doing so? And the answer was, just get over it and do it.
The best way to find out how far you can jump is to try and jump that stream and not quite make it.
So true.
You know, there's all these things that sort of happen naturally when you're outside.
Did you ever come across anything that conflicted with your goals for this paper or with your intended outcomes?
That's a really easy answer. No.
Hello and welcome to the Earthy Chats podcast, where we're cross-pollinating environmental education ideas. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Harvey-Berrill.
And I'm your other host, Ian Shanahan.
Let's get started.
And certainly here in New Brunswick, but I know across the country, our young people are really struggling with mental health issues. Anxiety, stress, depression, eco-anxiety are huge. And being outside and connecting with nature is both preventative and, if not a cure, at least it helps. So our high school kids need to get.
So hello and welcome to this edition of the Earthy Chats podcast. And we're in for a treat here. We're diving a little deep into some fantastic research on outdoor learning and the benefits. So a little bit of context for you. In 2019, the government of New Brunswick released their green paper, Succeeding at Home, a green paper on education in New Brunswick, which offered ideas on how to make the New Brunswick education system from birth to high school graduation the best in the world. In 2020, several groups involved with or advocates of outdoor learning responded to the green paper in a letter titled A Safe and Effective Strategy for Reopening Schools Following the First COVID-19 Pandemic Wave, which we'll refer to in short now as the Safe and Effective Strategy. So these groups wrote that letter highlighting the notable omission of time spent learning outdoors from the list of ideas that were proposed in that 2019 green paper for ways that they could do this. Joining us today are two contributors to that paper that was created also under the guidance and leadership of the Sustainability Education Alliance Steering Committee. More than 50 education and environmental experts contribute to the research and editing process, including vital consultation and interviews with certified teachers, curriculum specialists, outdoor educators, professors in faculties of education, and professional environmental educators. So, two people joining us today. We have Zomi Jaswicki. Zomi was raised in the Rocky Mountains and kept moving progressively east in stages before making home in the Maritimes in 2011. They have a diverse background in organic farming, interactive classroom activation, and a love of ecology. Zomi coordinates the Sustainability Education Alliance that creates incredible initiatives and events that encourage educating for sustainability. Zomi graduated from Acadia with a bachelor's honours in sustainability studies and a double major in history in 2016, and when they're not in the office, can be most likely found in the garden or the woods in any weather or season. Welcome, Zomi.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Our second guest is Nadine Ives. Nadine is from the Conservation Council of New Brunswick, the Learning Outside Project. Nadine has lived in New Brunswick for 28 years and works for the Conservation Council of New Brunswick as director of the Learning Outside Project. Nadine enjoyed childhood summers in the Colorado Rockies, tagging along with scientists and students doing field research and attending evening lectures. She followed her interest in biology through school and university, leading to a PhD in hardwood tree ecology. She's been involved in nature education in various forms for over 25 years, everything from school visits and nature walks to community engagement and university level teaching. Nadine heads outside to feel grounded, refreshed, re-energized, and to see what her non-human neighbors are up to. Welcome, Nadine.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. Thank you for your interest.
Okay, so I'll start with you, Zomi. Can you share what really brought about the creation of this discussion paper and why it's so important? And then we'll follow up with you too, Nadine.
I love this question as a first question because you might not have known this, but it also means you get a little bit of a rundown of how the New Brunswick Environmental Network works.
Excellent.
Nice.
Two for the price of one. I like.
So I've been at NBEN for about 4 years now, and I've been the coordinator or the manager of the Sustainability Education Alliance for that whole time. And it's grown a lot in the time that I've been here. I think it doubled and then it doubled again, which really shows how much environmental education and sustainability education are really vital and needed in this province.
And everywhere.
and everywhere. So from my perspective, everything that I talk about tends to have a really closed New Brunswick lens because that's where the organization's focus is. But from what I have heard anecdotally, a lot of this is going to apply to anybody who's interested in outdoor learning or teaching outside. So the Sustainability Education Alliance is anybody involved in the NBEN who's interested in environmental learning or sustainability education in any of its forms. The steering committee of the Sustainability Education Alliance thought that this would be something that's really important to do, and it's about 2.5 years in the making. As nonprofits go, we had to look for funding sources to be able to put money towards the capacity just to do the research and the writing. And from there, we did what NBEN does best, which is get together a bunch of the best minds and most knowledgeable people that we can find on a particular subject, get a bunch of information from them and a bunch of inspiration, and compile it all into something that they all agree represents them well. So yeah, that was our role. Nadine, I'd love to hear your insight in this, considering you were even one of the key interviews at the beginning of the research process.
Oh, was I? The creation of the discussion paper. I guess since I got involved in the Learning Outside project, which is about 10 years ago, it's been really apparent. We had some St. Thomas education students actually restart researching the whole importance of kids being outside. But there's so many opportunities to get kids outside into nature where they need to be through taking our school classes, students and teachers outside for learning outside. And when the green paper was put out, looking at ways that we as a population want to improve education in New Brunswick, it's like, yeah, a lot of those things can actually be addressed very effectively by taking learning outside. So it's something I'm passionate about. And also, I think it's really exciting because there's so many teachers have been doing this for their whole teaching careers. There's so many of us who work for NGOs or individually or various organizations that are supporting teachers, but it's really time to sort of take it to the next level and get it outdoor learning sort of embedded in the way teaching is done in New Brunswick for all ages, for all grade levels.
Totally. And I've, like you said, Zomi, that this could be relevant for other places. I'm already talking to sort of change makers in BC who are like, we have to make our own version of this, right? We have to do that research and we have some data already. And then, you know, if everybody creates one, and then maybe it, you know, can become integrated across the country and then set an example, you know, and get into across North America and beyond. But we have found, you know, that there are these really passionate teachers. There are these people that have this connection, but if they move on or they change schools, that there's that loss of energy and traction. And so if you can integrate it and embed, like you said, this sort of work into the structures, the everyday structures of schooling, then everybody has an equal chance to really sort of demonstrate their particular skills that they will most definitely bring, because every teacher has, you know, that special something that connects to them, even if they don't know it yet, even if they've never taught outside. I have these conversations with teachers who, once they go out, they're like, oh, I didn't realize that, like, this creative part of me comes out when I'm there and I feel so, you know, alive and in touch. So that's really cool.
Exactly. Good points.
I wish that the podcast audience could see me trying to suppress vocal delight at the idea of it going other provinces and making an impact there.
Doing a happy dance. It's going to happen. I see it happening. And when you create something, and we'll share it out widely again, and there'll be a link at the bottom of this podcast, when you create something so accessible, so aesthetically pleasing, because, hey, look, you know, when you've got a 27-page document, you want it to really be, there's some great graphics in there, there's some things that just, like, are really easy to absorb. You know, we want to copy that.
Please do.
Appropriate.
Appropriate. Yes, exactly.
Write us at the bottom and we're all good.
Yeah.
Take it all.
Yes, it's meant to be shared.
All of the resources featured in this podcast, plus many more, for students and educators alike, can be found online at the Outdoor Learning Store. Visit outdoorlearningstore.ca to view what's on offer. From waterproof notepads to binoculars and dip nets to sit pads, the store has you covered to take your learning outside. In addition, there are educator resource books to help you take your outdoor education to the highest level. That's www.outdoorlearningstore.ca. We're Canada's non-profit resource store.
I really like how early in the paper you get into terminology and specifically look at outdoor learning. And this is something we've talked about both on air per se and off air, is sort of separating outdoor education from outdoor learning. Maybe not separating, but just differentiating between what they are. So this is a question for Nadine. Can you summarize what you mean by outdoor learning in the paper?
As mentioned in the paper, and for me personally, outdoor learning is just any learning that's outside.
Right.
And again, people do tend to hook onto the term outdoor education, which tends to mean learning outdoor skills, you know, like the fabulous high school outdoor pursuits classes that are so popular that most of the students that want to take them can't get into them, you know, doing things like orienteering and all that kind of thing, or else it might cover sort of some science classes. But really, outdoor learning is just that. It's learning outdoors, and it can encompass any, you know, the traditional subject areas. If you can, you know, if you can count Lego blocks inside, you can count stones outside, you know, and there's a whole lot of benefits to doing whatever outside. And of course, the possibilities for opening up any subject topic just expand phenomenally when you just take the class outside. So the idea is to, you know, for outdoor learning is just learning that takes place outdoors, because too often the outdoors has been seen as a place where you might go for phys ed, or again, the orienteering classes, or maybe recess, or if the students have been good in air quotes, you know, as a treat. But really, it's a foundational space for learning with myriad benefits.
And you also differentiate between outdoor learning and land-based learning. And I think this is a really important point to touch on, just sort of reiterating what's in the report. What are the differences between those two?
Well, my understanding, land-based learning refers specifically to Indigenous teachings taught by Indigenous educators to primarily Indigenous youth. So that's a very specific type of learning. And it's so exciting to see so many Indigenous educators reclaiming that for the youth in their communities and sharing it with others in many cases. So we, the Conservation Council and others, you know, we are not an Indigenous or an Indigenous-led organization. So it's not our place to engage in land-based learning per se, unless, you know, we are invited to support or help out Indigenous educators in doing so. So in this paper, this discussion paper, we did want to make it as broad as possible and address the whole school education system in New Brunswick, which of course, you know, there are really cool, like more and more Indigenous schools developing and really exciting things happening. And I'll pass it over to Zomi for
anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, well, from an NBEN perspective, we do have an Indigenous school board that's a member group of our organization. So some of the paper's insights came from them. And I think that part was important to make sure that we understand that a lot of the outdoor learning curriculum or ideas or philosophies have come from that. So it's really important always to cite your sources.
As always.
Yeah, exactly. But also, we are not here to tell them what to do. We are here to listen to what they need and respond as best as we can.
For sure. You also speak in the paper about how outdoor learning helps to meet goals. And obviously, these are different from province to province, state to state, country to country. But New Brunswick has 6 global competencies. Can you walk us through those?
Yeah, well, the global competencies are actually really common in a lot of different education districts or school boards. So the New Brunswick ones are pretty much the same as them. The 6 of them are critical thinking and problem solving, innovation, creativity, and entrepreneurship, self-awareness and self-management, sustainability and global citizenship, communication, and collaboration. So these are considered foundational skills that need to be met in all subjects at all ages. The New Brunswick specific one is easy to find with a quick web search. And it's got a little bit more detail about what exactly those definitions mean so that it's easier for teachers to know that they're meeting those goals. And the one thing that really stood out to us with the green paper was how much they underlined the importance of meeting all of these goals, of having each student be extremely fluent in all six global competencies, but then did not use outdoor learning as a low-hanging fruit of a tool that would make sure that all students get there and get there quickly.
And we could probably do a series of podcasts on how outdoor learning helps students achieve each of these competencies, but are there any particular examples that really stand out to you?
Nadine's got a lot of them.
All right, Nadine, you're up.
Well, I was going to say, in all of these, I mean, so many studies show that when children, you spend time outdoors in nature, they do learn self-confidence. They show more collaboration working together. And again, critical thinking, they learn in terms of self-awareness. You become exploring in nature, your proprioception or awareness of your body and what it can do. I mean, it's, as I always say, the best way to find out how far you can jump is to try and jump that stream and not quite make it.
So true.
You know, there's all these things that sort of happen naturally when you're outside. You know your strength. A lot of things happen. And again, there's collaboration. If you allow children, and this is outdoor learning and also play, but of course, there's not really a hard line between the two. You know, it's like you see kids helping each other build forts, or I know a teacher who uses that and then goes around and sort of assesses, okay, collaboration, critical thinking, problem solving, as they figure out, is this roof that they've built out of logs and pieces of plywood, is it going to support someone's weight? Well, you know, they're doing all these things outside. So I think there's that. And just being outside is good for children's and youth and everybody's mental health and emotional health and well-being. And it does support social skills. And yeah, I could go on. It's good to be outside, breathing the fresh air, you know.
You also mentioned in the report about how there are wonderful outcomes when it comes to students who have learning differences, and that they can often come alive. I'm paraphrasing, but they often come alive in these outdoor environments. I mean, what is it about the outdoors that helps students that maybe just don't thrive with the four walls of a classroom?
I'm not an expert in this. I just know what I've been told by principals and teachers and observing it myself. Mm-hmm. Often, I think it's because it's like a three-dimensional, multifaceted world outside. So it's not like classroom settings. We tend to focus on visual learning with some oral whatever. So if you're not good at sitting still and taking in what you're hearing from your teacher, what you're seeing on the screen, it's very frustrating. But as soon as you're outside, there's just more going on. Your senses are engaged, so your whole body's more engaged. And I think there's also ways to, you know, release some of the tension or the activity just by being outside. I mean, studies show that just by being outside, a group of students are more physically active. So I think that's helpful. And again, I think being outside just reaches a lot of the different learning, what's the word? You know, the different
ways of learning,
goals,
learning outcomes,
or just the ways that people learn, you know, whether it's a someone who learns by listening or doing or speaking or moving or whatever. I think a lot of those are, a lot of students with those different learning modalities or whatever can learn outside well.
I think when I'm out there with my students and I see actually a lot of neurodiverse people that I work with have sensory complexities or their sensory inputs and outputs are different, and everybody's are, but maybe they're more intense. And I just read a piece of research yesterday actually that talked about, they just have finished a massive study on just people listening to nature sounds and the sounds of natural sounds versus sort of man-made, you know, clicking, clackings, you know, the sounds of leaves rushing, the sounds of crunching underfoot, and that it just lowers all of the sort of stress hormones, it lowers heart rate, and it just enables a space for the body to just find a bit more peace and calm. So I have anecdotally seen this myself in my own teaching as well.
We are the Columbia Basin Environmental Education Network, or CBEEN. You can visit our website at cbeen.ca. We are the regional network for environmental education in the Columbia Basin, supporting a community of engaged and effective environmental educators by connecting them to resources, information, professional development, and networking opportunities.
Is this just for students though? Like, does outdoor learning just support students, or is there a wider sort of benefit for others involved in the learning space?
Studies show that teachers report greater job satisfaction and lower stress levels and overall well-being and happiness. So, you know, our whole goal is to support teachers. So they certainly benefit. And where I'm coming from at the Conservation Council, part of our role is in getting students outside is to help foster that connection with nature and learn about nearby nature. And that is an important foundation for developing a lifelong sense of stewardship and caring about the environment. And of course, learning about how things work in nature, ecosystem processes and so on, is the foundational knowledge for what these young people are going to need as we move into a future with a changing climate, you know, to understand, you know, what beavers do and their role in the environment and the importance of wetlands and how we need to protect those and how they can help us in a changing climate. So it's really, you know, it's like I say, you know, our kids need nature and nature needs kids too. So I think it's just important for all of us, for society.
For humanity. Yeah. You call it in the paper the experiential edge. And I like that because I see so much of the necessity for abstract thinking, for problem solving beyond what we've already thought, for being able to make interconnections between seemingly different things, like when we now know that trees are talking to each other and sharing resources. Like, we have got to just think outside of a very narrow focus. And it seems that, you know, this paper explains, for those who are not already on board, how that's done and how not just meeting those core competencies, but really building a society of independent, critical, advanced thinkers, like how important this is.
I read of a study also that apparently our brains are better at making decisions when we're outside.
Does not surprise me.
It's like we evolved. We didn't evolve in four-walled structures. And so apparently we actually think better when we're outside. And I also remember being at a conference with two Indigenous teachers talking about their own school program. And one of them had been uncertain about teaching outside because she hadn't done that. But then she got outside and realized that teaching the native language was a whole lot easier outside because Mi'kmaq is like, it's a land-based language. So, and I just thought that was so beautiful and so like true, you know, just very clear instance of like, yeah, it makes sense to teach that language outside because it's based on that. And, but I think in general for all of us, non-Indigenous as well as Indigenous, our home, our true home is in nature, in the natural world of which we are a part.
And I'm glad that you pointed out the title. I really like the title, but I cannot take full credit, again, citing things that should be cited. It's actually coming from the Francophone sector's 10-year education plan in New Brunswick. They called it Donnant à nos enfants une longueur d'avance, or translated as giving our children an edge. So lifted directly from there, because we truly, you know, all of the research that we found shows that this really would be it. Nadine, I kind of wonder if this would be a good spot to tell them your story about the math teacher.
Ooh, we like stories, always.
Okay. You'll have to shut me up because apparently I'm a smart one. Well, just I think this might have been with one of the other questions that when Zomi and I were speaking earlier, discussing amongst ourselves, the benefits of teaching outside or learning outside. In this one story, I was at a school that I've been to many times over the years doing outdoor activities, but I was not doing one this day, but there were a bunch of students lined up with their clipboards and a little worksheet, answer sheet, and pencils heading ready to go outside. And one of the kids called over to me and said, "Oh, Nadine, we're going outside for outdoor math." And I said, "Great." And I managed to catch the teacher at the end of the day, and it was just an idea she had. And that day's math lesson was learning how to read a clock, you know, the big hand and the little hand. And what she had done is, instead of handing out a sheet with little clock faces on it that the kids would just write down under the clock faces, whether it said 2 o'clock or 10 o'clock, she had just had those images and hung them up around the playgrounds. This is a gravel playground on a chain link fence in the play structures, not on a nice nature trail or anything. And then she took the kids outside with answer sheets. And for the students who had their own individual educational programs, she had the modifications, like just for the big hand or whatever. And she said she was stunned. It was more successful than she could have imagined because the students all ran from one question, you know, one image to the next, and wrote it down on their answer and then ran to the next one. So they weren't told, it wasn't a race, they just did it. And they would fill out their form and then they'd run back to her and say, did I get this right? And she'd say, oh, maybe you want to go have another look at number four. And they'd run back and correct it. And she said, if I had just done that as a classroom worksheet, most of the kids wouldn't have bothered to finish the worksheet and none of them would have been interested in going back and correcting their errors, right? So she said, just taking it outside and switching up how she did the exact same exercise was far more successful. And I love that story.
Absolutely. And I think if you look, I think a lot of historically it's been that, you know, maybe being outdoors is, you could agree that it's good for their social, it's good for their physical well-being, but it is, the research supports, academic. And if you're looking at learning key skills and assessments and things that you can certify, yes, my students have learned to read analog time as part of their math, ticking off those sheets, which, you know, there needs to be a certain amount of within the formal education system. There you go. There's your improved academic performance right there, like giving them a different space to feel excited about the lesson and to feel physically engaged with it and mentally engaged. That's excellent.
Another thing I love about that story is how it really points to how taking it outside meant that all of a sudden those children were choosing to collaborate together, which I might point out is one of the global competencies.
Love it. And I've seen that across the board in some of the programs that we do. They ask to work in partners. And, you know, rather than feeling like, oh, this is mine and I have to do it all by myself. Okay, so talking about taking it outside, in the paper you talk about some common barriers, Omi, that teachers have shared in your interviews and research about the potential barriers for making outdoor learning effective. So there's things like lack of time or resources to adapt lessons to go outside, troubles linking to a curriculum or potentially overcoming fear of being outside and not knowing what to do, ensuring equity if you have, you know, low income places and you don't have the right kit to take your students outside. How do you suggest achieving these and how does the paper think about supporting teachers in this?
This was a really interesting part of the writing process because the barriers that teachers face are very real impediments. And we were hoping in the writing of this to show teachers that are interested in this, but not yet feeling confident that they can actually achieve it, to let them know that, yes, you can really do this. And at the same time, it was also informed by a really fantastic keynote panel at the last C conference, which this is a bit of a plug, but you can see it on the C website, SEA, like Sustainability Education Alliance, sea-nb.ca. There's a list of different YouTube playlists where we've uploaded all of the recorded sessions from that conference and many others. So this one, Back to the Basics, had this fantastic panel of teachers. And I was floored by their answer that you would hear if you get curious and end up going to watch it. So one of the questions asked to the panel was, what is the best advice you can give a teacher who is wanting to start out, but just not feeling confident in doing so? And the answer was, just get over it and do it. And I was like, really not expecting that answer. And it really helped to inform us how to go about putting in this section in the discussion paper. So one of the biggest and most common barriers that the teachers that I have talked to and that we talked to in the research of this is a very, very real barrier, and it's time, teacher time. We hear over and over again, teachers are overwhelmed, already doing unpaid overtime, and needing to keep up with all sorts of requirements that are constantly changing, maybe not constantly changing, that's definitely an over-exaggeration, but changing requirements for how they report on learning outcomes and all sorts of paperwork that they also need to do on top of everything else. So teachers are often faced with the reality that in order to start going outside all the time, they would need to restructure all of their lesson plans, and not only that, but how they report back on them. And the time needed to just go over that one first hurdle is the most common barrier. And I think the most, like, it's not a physical barrier. What's the word I'm looking for here?
Like a structural barrier.
It's a structural barrier. Thank you. So really what they need is like maybe some extra PD time or professional learning time so that they are able to make those large changes and do the bit of creative thinking that they would need to in order to make lesson plans outdoors that work well for them. Sometimes it requires very little modification. Sometimes it requires quite a bit, especially if you're getting into higher level STEM classes, for example. You might have to really think outside the box. And there are ways to do this, tons of resources on how to do this and other ideas that people may have, but it's still just this massive amount of time. It's a one-time investment. Everything can be adjusted from there in the same way that they continue to create their lessons and report on them as it is now, but they really just need that time.
Totally. And I think, you know, hopefully what we're doing as part of the Outdoor Learning Store, as part of Green Teacher, when we provide these like professional development webinars or workshops, you know, that we record and can be watched on your own time if you can't be there live. We hope as well with the tools that we have for like pedagogical programming that are available, you know, if school districts or boards can support or high-level administration can support their educators in accessing these, and the number one being time. Also, you know, potentially some financial investment and resources can really make a huge difference. And that's where this has got to be like a whole well-rounded sort of approach to integrating, right? It can't just be passionate teachers saying, I love this. And it can't just be school admin saying, I need you to tick this box for social emotional well-being. It has to be everyone working together to build new systems.
Can I do a plug for Great Minds Think Outside here?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Of course. Do.
This okay, is so. The place for plugs. This is where we plug loudly.
So coming out of the Sustainability Education Alliance's PD, so professional development team, years ago, we would do at the district's council days, we would go and do professional learning sessions for teachers on the benefits of teaching outside. And what we would hear back from is like teachers who would then go and get all excited about this at our, you know, sessions, even once we moved away from PowerPoint presentations to hands-on activities, they would then go back to their schools and find that they felt very isolated, like they were in the woods on their own, and they had all these great ideas and things that they'd learned and activities that they wanted to run with their classes. But everybody else at the school just kind of looked at them sideways and they didn't have administrative support or whatever. Not always the case, but it's hard to be the only teacher trying to do things in an innovative way. And so what we do with Great Minds Think Outside, which is a collaborative group under the NBN banner, Zomi and others coordinate us all, which is like herding cats. But what we do is we all work for different organizations and have different backgrounds as nature or outdoor educators, but we work in teams. We've got a set program with modifications, and two or three of us will go to a school and deliver a 2.5-3 hour or all day hands-on outdoor experiential professional learning session for the entire teaching staff of that school. And it kind of happened just serendipitously the first time, but we saw the magic that happens, because then you have the grade four teachers just saying, oh yeah, well, for this unit, we could do that. And hey, we could adapt this to that. And we also incorporate times where they, in smaller groups, they do get together and they have a rough framework of an activity, and they have to come up with ways that they would adapt it to their own curriculum and their classes. But you see, it's amazing, because you see the diehards who have been doing this for years leading the charge, and you see by the end of the 2.5 hours, the two or three teachers who really weren't that keen on going out at all because it was a bit drizzly or the ground was wet or it was a bit cold, by the end of it, they're fully engaged and laughing and having a good time. So this is one way that we're trying to, you know, get it more cemented into the school. Because as you said, unfortunately, often there's one teacher or a principal that's a real champion and encourages this outdoor learning, but they just get transferred or retire or something happens. And it's, I've been shocked to find out first as a parent and then as an educator, how fragile that can be and how we really need to get everything as well rooted through as many different mycorrhizal fungi attaching everything, to use the forest analogy.
Amazing.
Love it.
So the great minds think outside is one. And then the discussion paper, trying to get it into the education system, it's all, you know, everything. But we have found that it really helpful to sort of work with the entire staff at the same time. And they have a lot of fun. And another little plug, in the feedback that we get, we often get, you know, they really like this activity or that activity. But often for so many teachers, the highlight was getting outside and running and laughing with my coworkers.
Yes.
You know, so they're already, that's that, who does it benefit in addition to the students, you know, the teachers. And when they, you know, you get to see who are the jokers and who are the really competitive ones, and they don't have a chance to do that, you know, in a normal day. So that's an important way that wasn't, you know, part of our initial goal, but that's turned out to be an important way that we support teachers through that program.
I think I used to spend all of my time with young people, with kids, either in interpretive things, guiding or running programs. And then my life had sort of shifted towards more professional development for educators or adults. And I was a bit like, oh, I don't get to, you know, dress as a fairy. And then I'm like, well, actually, you do.
You
continue to dress as a seasonal fairy and you empower them because they see me walking down the hallways and they're like, yes. And then I see that other teacher wearing like a funny hat and I'm like, yes. And he's like, this is my special hat for Wednesdays on Wild Wednesdays. And I bring, you know, like, it's that thing of re-engaging with imagination. Gillian Judson's book, Imagination in Ecological Education, is like a massive one for how you can integrate that into all curriculum and do it and just bringing joy. And like, for example, my mum was one of these people who loves walking, but if it was drizzling, she wouldn't go outside. And I remember going back to England and walking with her and being like, Mum, we're not made of sugar, we won't melt. And she like laughed. And that's the line I use with students. And now I talked about how, you know, the rain is sort of cleansing the earth and how it's feeding it and caring for it. And now she said she actively goes out on rainy days because she wants to be a part of that cleanse. She wants to be a part of that healing process. And so just like shifting that perspective and that context and that mindset can be so influential. And then that's feeding out into so many students just from that one teacher. But oh, so we're all very passionate people here. We could just talk for hours.
Stoked on Science, providing engaging, educational and fun programs across the Columbia Basin. Is your school or organization looking to develop your environmental programming, connect your outdoor time more deeply to the curriculum, or engage your students or teachers with unique programs that go beyond the basic science topics, like delving into the history of the Earth, how it's changed and where it's going? If so, visit www.stokedonscience.com to connect for environmental education consulting or to book programs for your K-12 and adult professional development courses.
Staying with Nadine, a big part of the report is mandated hours. And in New Brunswick, this is already mandated for early childhood settings, 2 hours a day, so about 10 hours a week. But then it stops. And this is a widespread issue, and there are so many answers to this very open-ended question, but like, why does it stop when we just pass this sort of mythical barrier of in and around age 4?
That is a mystery.
Easy question.
I think
it's a huge mystery.
Well, it's great. It's great. I was surprised actually to find that it was mandated here in New Brunswick for the preschool set, and it doesn't, to me, speaking as an individual, it doesn't make sense that it suddenly stops. But again, with the Learning Outside project starting, like it's, and in general, it's much easier to get uptake from elementary schools. Mm-hmm. I think there's a general recognition that young kids need to be outside and running around. And elementary school teachers, the way our system's set up, generally have a lot more freedom to take an hour here, or if they want to do math outside, they can borrow some time from other subjects and catch up on it. There's just more flexibility in their day. And then once, it seems to me that once, you know, our students get to grade 6 in middle school and high school, then the expectation is, you know, it's got to be full on learning, sitting at a desk, and then doing lots of homework and more hours of both. Although my understanding is from studies done around the world that neither hours spent in school or hours spent doing homework really contribute to learning. So I think it's this idea that older students, you're moving out of childhood, so you don't get to play anymore, which is certainly not true.
Yeah. Where's the fun in that?
Mm. But there's also the logistical things, like as we are starting to move into middle school and high school programming with learning outside, there are those 50-minute class periods that you can't, unless you can get two teachers to go together. And I managed to do that once last year. You know, there are those very real time constraints.
Oh, for sure.
And a shorter time. So just moving students outside and in, unless you sort of have a class right after lunch and say, meet outside. But I think, obviously, that the older students, middle school and high school students, need to be outside just as much as younger students, and for some different reasons. And certainly here in New Brunswick, but I know across the country, our young people are really struggling with mental health issues. Anxiety, stress, depression, eco-anxiety are huge. And being outside and connecting with nature is both preventative and, if not a cure, at least it helps. So our high school kids need to be outside, and our middle school kids need to be outside, you know, for the same reasons as younger kids, and they've got mental wellness things as well, but particularly we really need to take better care of our youth and their mental wellness. So that's another reason to really change that status quo and get students in all grade levels outside.
Definitely. Obviously, so much research went into this paper, and you were cross-referencing with many other papers. We'll start with Zomi. Did you ever come across anything that conflicted with your goals for this paper or with your intended outcomes?
That's a really easy answer. No. That's and I can elaborate on that.
Yes, please.
I feel
do.
Sometimes we're biased, right? We're just like these like absolute like stalwart outdoor lesson lovers, and that, you know, we've got to be balanced as in all information. But they're just, I haven't ever come across it.
Same.
Well, here's the thing is, as NBEN, it's not our job to have an opinion. It's our job to collect information and then portray that information as accurately as we can.
Right.
So we put one of our best academic researchers on the beginning stages of this project to do the research and conduct interviews and really dig into this. And her being the scientific mind that she is, Clara Tyson, she came to me about 6 weeks in and she said, I have been looking high and low for anything that would disprove all of these overwhelmingly positive things I'm finding, and I haven't found any. Am I doing something wrong?
And when I had your to literature say, review is literally just one point of view, but it is.
Yeah. And I mean, that is a problem. So, I mean, at that point of the research that she was undertaking, she hadn't talked to a lot of just like regular teachers who aren't involved in this world yet. And I think it is really important to bring up again that like the barriers that teachers face, especially the lack of confidence in their abilities to properly manage a classroom outside and their lack of time, those are really the conflicting opinions that exist, other than just regular people who don't really know anything about it and saying, well, being outside is for play and being inside is for real learning, which is not, that's a perception and it's not academically based. And other than that, the only other barrier that comes up, actually, this came up in a number of interviews or reporters getting feedback from other steering committee members for the Sustainability Education Alliance, was just the cost of doing this. Like, who's going to pay for this? Who's going to foot this bill? And I really struggle to hear that personally, which is, this is very unprofessional of me to take off my NBEN hat. I shouldn't have done that. Thank you.
You're forgiven.
Well, this is a place where we care, right? And actually that vulnerability is, you know, a lot of teachers are having to take off their professional hats every day to,
yeah,
you know, emotionally support students going through stuff or to put
right.
more time and energy in than they're mandated for.
Well, it's hard to hear just because after going through this research for so long and finding over and over again that you don't need really any special equipment to do this, and people assume that it means you have to buy all new supplies, you have to create a giant $10,000 outdoor classroom with logs instead of chairs and a fancy board that doesn't rinse off in the rain, and like just making a classroom from the inside and putting it outside with all the same elements, you don't need to do any of that. And that's what the research has said over and over. It's actually kind of possibly better when you don't do that, when you are just using what is available to you in your own schoolyard. And there is an equity piece there of recognizing that not all schools have nice green spaces. They might not even have a soccer field or something that they can use.
Totally.
And that also brings up a really interesting potential partnership with their local municipalities and parks that might be nearby, being able to section off pieces of the park at certain times for the students to have safe outdoor learning.
Or community.
But especially in an inner city area, community collaborations. Exactly.
And they're happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking as a network of somebody who does my best every day to get people talking and get people working together, collaboration with your municipalities and possibly even other schools. Like, we don't need to just put students on a bus every day to drive them to some sort of thing that we've decided is a pristine natural area, because that doesn't really exist. We really need to just be outside and getting to know what our particular outside looks like. And if we don't like what that outside looks like, then we can change it.
Amazing.
Anything you want to add on top of that, Nadine?
No, just in New Brunswick, we're very lucky, right? Because I think, did NBN do a study? I think in New Brunswick, you're never more than 20 minutes away from nature or something like that. But even, and so many of our schools are, do have natural areas on their own school grounds, but others are more inner city or don't have much, but often, you know, there's a city park or something within walking distance. So it's a question of learning to use those spaces and helping schools modify their own environments. And there are several really nice municipal school partnerships for developing outdoor learning spaces as well that are happening here. But I think anywhere, and I've done nature walks in a, you know, a city school that's just got a flat grassy space with a chain link fence around it and some tall trees outside the fence. And I just have laminated photos of different animals that I put up along the fence. You know, we go visit the frog and talk about, you know, whether it hibernates or migrates or whatever. And then we hop to the next one, you know,
hop,
so it's like
a
there's a lot of things that you can do. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of things you can do. And then, you know, so many of those schools are really interested in greening their spaces or adding more natural features. So, but it could be as simple as hanging up a bird feeder, right?
Totally. And you could build that into your woodworking class or all of these things. And I'm totally with you. You don't need anything to go outside. You just need to move from the indoor physical space to the outdoor physical space and to just go and experience it. For us, like at the store, you know, we have a link to some funding that's North America wide or Canada wide or province specific for you as well. If you are looking for resources, perhaps some of these sort of books, like The Walking Curriculum, for example, I always come back to this again and again, Gillian Judson, perfectly accessible for urban spaces, looking for cracks, looking for shapes, you know, brings equity and imagination into that work. But also, yeah, these community collaborations of connecting with local NGOs or groups that might already have these resources or that can come in, share their expertise with you. I just think there's so many ways, like you say, that it doesn't have to be. There's lots of options. It doesn't all look one way.
Exactly. And just to, again, to the differing opinions, I think I've heard a few adults say, oh, I wouldn't have been able to learn in that setting. You know, I needed to be sitting at a desk, but they're saying that like now as an adult, they weren't there. And others are teachers who find it difficult. I think a lot of it is you need to give it a chance. You need to start, you know, if you have a class, if you start with shorter time periods and then you build up to it and you gain your competence. And certainly for classes, things might be a little rowdy the first time or two you go out, you know, but they soon learn that they're going out to learn and they enjoy it, you know, and teachers who think that it's hard to get their class out the door, it's like, well, students figure out how to be moved from the classroom to the cafeteria or to the music room or to the gym. And moving outside might involve a different change of footwear or adding coats. But it's really once it's sort of part of the normal school day, those things settle down and become less of a barrier. So, you know, if someone tries it once and says, yeah, no, this, there's no benefit here, you know, it's one of those things, which is why the paper does suggest moving into this gradually with mandating, you know, starting small and taking 5 years to transition to where it's 2 hours a day.
And practice makes perfect. If you practice those transitions, I know people using song, even with older students, about like bundling up, bundle up now, time to go outside. And then it's just like this cue, like, okay. And they're doing the same system. I do a thing when I'm out like ski guiding, for example, with adults in the proper wilderness, of where we do a top to toe. I touch all the bits. Does everyone have a hat? Does everyone have sunglasses? Does everyone have a jacket and a mid layer? Like, we do it and they look at me like I'm an idiot. Every single one of them has forgotten something, whether it's something as important as their personal avalanche transceiver or their sunglasses, which are really important for light reflecting off of snow and causing snow blindness. It's just the more you practice it and having these systems in place, setting up boundaries. One of the things I would love to say is that our partners, the Outdoor Council of Canada, run an amazing field leader course in that, you know, it teaches these outdoor risk management practices. It says, how can you call people back from a further distance while you're out there? How can you set boundaries when there aren't gates or physical walls to do that? Okay, we're running out of time because, my gosh, we could go on and on. Passion is power and it's wonderful. But I just want to ask a final question to you both about, you know, what are your hopes for the outcomes of this paper and how do you see it being implemented and what does the future look like?
Well, for the NBEN, our hope is just that it gets people talking and that coming out of it, we will have the opportunity to speak with more people about this and break down more silos and get more people working together and collaborating, making the connections that need to happen.
Snaps for that. I love it.
Exactly. And there's a whole network of folks across the province who are and available and ready and qualified to help teachers and encourage them and support them in taking their classes outside. And I really hope that we do manage to get some uptake and get it more embedded in the system, because as I guess simply, you know, our kids, our youth, our educators, they need this, they deserve it. And there's no time like the present, you know, now.
Yes. Hop to it.
Yes, get on with it.
Just do it.
Yeah, it's that advice again. I had one of the kids do like a 360 on skis when we were outside. And I was like, how do I do that then? He went, well, you just do it. I was like, oh, okay. It seems to be the advice of the century.
It's the underlying theme here.
Yes, get on with it. Maybe that'll be the title of the podcast.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, Zomi and Nadine, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your passion and enthusiasm and knowledge. It's been a beautiful morning.
And thanks for the invitation and thanks for all you do.
If anybody's interested in learning more, you can find C at sea.aev on Instagram and on Facebook. And you can find links there to all sorts of resources, a whole bunch of member groups like Nadine's Learning Outside at the Conservation Council. And I have all sorts of resources to point, especially New Brunswick teachers, to. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Thank you so much for joining us for this month's Earthy Chat. You can find the resources featured in this podcast at the Outdoor Learning Store. That's www.outdoorlearningstore.ca. You can also visit greenteacher.com for incredible educational resources and webinars. And CBEEN, that's CBEEN.org, for a range of environmental resources, including professional development opportunities, grant information, and green jobs. Lastly, you can visit www.stokedonscience.com to chat with me, Jade, about science workshops or educational consulting. Tune in next month for more cross-pollination of ideas and another fun, earthy chat.
Flowing awesome. Like the Miramichi River. NB very reference.
Good. Yes.
Excellent.
I don't have many of them. I haven't been there. I have to go.
Oh, well, it's worth the trip.
Oh, it is.
100%. Is that where the puffins are? Where are the puffins?
There are puffins. There's Grand Manan Island.
Yeah, and Machias
Seal Island, that's the spot.
Which is between, I think, New Brunswick and Maine. I think you have to sign up a year in advance to try and get your time slot to go hang out with the puffins there.